On this special episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we discuss the New York State Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers Fall Conference in Tarrytown, New York, on November 6th and 7th, and interview speakers and association leaders.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency, and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys.
Welcome to episode 74 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for November 8th, 2019. Recording from the New York State Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers Fall Conference in Tarrytown, New York, and our studio in Spenceport, New York. This is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS, and I'm here with John Gailey, who is the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the leading experts in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry, and the author and co-author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, including the Survey Guide for ASCs. John speaks frequently at both national and state ASC meetings on a wide variety of topics.
So we're back in Rochester after our wonderful conference in Tarrytown. And as we promised, this is a special episode in order to highlight some of the things that we discussed during the conference that are specific to New York State Association members and anybody that owns a surgery center or operates a surgery center in New York.
It was a nice conference. And I guess they're going to be back in the same place in the spring.
That's correct. So what we've always done, unlike most state associations, New York State Association does two conferences a year, one in the spring and one in the fall. Lately, it's been one conference would be downstate and one would be upstate. We're resetting things and going to have two conferences in a row downstate so that the fall conference will be upstate and the spring conference will be downstate. And the reason for that is that there is another conference that goes on, the New York Metro Conference, every fall, and we don't want to interfere with that. So that's why we're moving some things around. So as we said, that's why we're going to have back-to-back conferences in Tarrytown. So the next conference will be in the spring 2020. I don't think we have a date yet.
Okay. And the conferences are a day to a day and a half.
That's correct. In New York City, it tends to be a day, and upstate, we tend to be a day and a half. And our goal is to provide up to 8 AEUs for CAS certificates and 3 to 4 hours of IPCUs for CAPE certificates during the conferences. Those are for, you know, people that are certified administrators or certified infection preventionists.
So we got to interview 3 speakers, and we'll be including those in an upcoming episode.
That's right. So I did a session on preparing for a survey, and then we also had a couple other speakers, one about nursing retention, one about developing a total joint program, and another one regarding cybersecurity. But for this episode, we're just going to include the interviews that we did with the leaders of the state association. So we're going to interview Jeffrey Flynn, who is the vice president of the New York State Association, the program chair, and he talked about the conference. John Van Valkenburg, who is the president of the state association, and he talked about the association and the various activities. Lisa Wickens Altieri, who is the president and founder for Capital Health Consulting, she provides government relations services to the association. And she discussed the activities going on in Albany, the state capital, on behalf of the association. Then we interviewed Phyllis Worth. She is from Intelair, talked about the Intelair program with the New York State Association members. And we also interviewed Wes Merritt, who represented Physicians Reciprocal Insurance, which is also known as PRI. And they talked about the various PRI programs available in New York State.
You won't hear me on these interviews because Jenna and I were at the registration desk pretty much checking people in. So John was going around with his microphone and had a little table he was doing that with. So I was there. I was doing something else.
And I've listened to all those interviews, and there is a lot of background noise. Mm-hmm. The quality is actually pretty good, but there is a lot of background noise because of where we were located. Mm-hmm. So we apologize about that, but I think we've been able to clean it up pretty well so that you'll mm-hmm. be able to hear them. So let's take a short break, and we'll come back with the interviews.
So first, John talked to Jeffrey Flynn, the vice president of the New York State Association and the program chair, and they just talked a little bit about the conference. So let's listen to that.
So I'm here at the New York State Association meeting in Tarrytown, and I'm here with Jeffrey Flynn, who is the program chair. So Jeffrey, great conference. We're recording actually at 3:30 on the, we're about an hour and a half away. My speech is in about 30 minutes, hour and a half away from the end of the conference. So we can categorically state that this has been fantastic, and thank you for all the hard work you did on pulling it all together.
I appreciate that, and certainly you on the programming. This has been such a strong program that so many different tracks that people were really interested in. It's been the best attendance of centers that we've ever had, and we just hope to continue to grow on this. We've gotten very positive feedback from different members, attendees who aren't members, and then in addition to the fact the vendors found it to be very helpful, people were walking around and very engaged with them.
Right, absolutely. So I just interviewed John. Hopefully I put this in the right order. So John talked a little bit about the benefits of membership and talked a little bit about the conferences and the upcoming conferences next year. Can you talk a little bit more about sponsorship opportunities for, you know, vendors and what they can expect and how quickly they need to get in touch with you to be prepared for the spring conference?
The one good thing is already the sponsors here, at least 90% of them have committed already to next year's program. We've also made it easier so that they're able to participate with, and in their own budgets, it's easier for them that they can participate with both conferences at once.
Right.
That's been very helpful.
If they want to, some people
still upstate, some people are downstate, right. Just where their businesses are located. But we do have the opportunity, if you want to participate in Ben, there's a bit of a discount for that, and that's worked out. And also the company just being able to put it in their budget has been very helpful. A number of the vendors are really finding that they do get direct access to people who are decision makers and realizing that they never would have gotten to that person by code calling or just mailers or just random emails. So therefore, they're finding the benefit of the conference itself. We plan to really make the push and start the process in about 2 weeks because a lot of companies are doing their budgeting for next year. So we're going to start the process in 2 weeks to sign up the vendors for the April conference. So that's going to be our target. And our target is to have about 10 more vendors than what we had here today. That's going to be our goal.
How many vendors did you have?
There's 28 vendors in all at this one, and as I said, we're aiming to have 38 next time because we've got a number of companies that were very eager but came in very last minute. Right. It's just we hadn't had experience with them before, and the issue is they hadn't gotten in contact with us. So we do have a lot of commitments already for the spring.
Yeah, and this is a new venue for us here in Tarrytown. We hadn't tried this part of the state, and it's been very good. I mean, it's been a good space, and certainly the vendors have very high visibility for the members as they're walking by.
Yeah, the conference layout is wonderful, especially from where the vendors are to where the rooms are. There's not a lot of walking around. We're all in the same section, and it works out well. I think it's very important just with this, in relative that this is the downstate meeting per se, it's easy and accessible for people to get to from the thruway to just through 81 through and 80 over the bridge. Everyone was easy to get here very quickly, and I think that's been a really significant change as opposed to going into the city. That just seems to be a bigger situation. And then obviously the cost of the conference. I got to tell you, when we did have one in New York City last year, you know, the cost of that conference was about $27,000 more than this conference this year. So, you know, we're putting on a better and bigger program quality-wise, but we're also getting more for our money by being in this section. And downstate's very happy with it. And then as much come down as we, you know, we'll go up to Saratoga too. It's a nice balance.
Well, and certainly people from Western New York, as we help them to understand, even though we're near the city, this is just a straight shot down the thruway. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was coming from Virginia, and I realized it was a straight shot up from Virginia. I really didn't even get off any of the major highways. So, I dropped off, and at the exit was the hotel. So you couldn't be more convenient than this, no matter which direction you're coming from.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's just talk a little bit about the layout here. What we did is we had a total of four rooms. One was the main room for the general sessions, and we had three breakout rooms now, slightly different than in the past, mm-hmm. which allows us to really have very dynamic, much more content here, and gives a lot of opportunity for people to go to sessions that were much more important to them. So, you know, we had breakouts for administrators, we had breakouts for infection control, and we had breakouts kind of focused on, you know, other areas like clinical areas there. We'll probably put finance back into it. In the spring, we try to rotate some topics through.
And eventually we hope to get to ambitiously to maybe four breakouts where we're bringing lower people into it, whether it's the fact that we're doing something for surgical techs, because we all have to reach out for them and find ways to maintain them and educate them in the future. There's a lot of ideas that we can just move forward with. So I think we have the ability in places like this to find that we really can grow. And certainly with our vendor support, we finally have the ability to do so.
And we need to, again, emphasize for CASC and CAPE certified individuals, we offer 8 AEUs, I think we ended up with, for the...
AEUs for $100 registration.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You're not going to get that anywhere else.
That's right. And 3 IPCUs. And I should also point out, I've had some requests, we'll have to spread the word about this, but I've had some requests from surrounding states. Because, whereas this is, you know, focused on New York, there's a lot of material that if you're coming from another state and you're not able to go to that state association, or if you're in a state that doesn't have a lot of members or only has one conference a year, you know, feel free to come up. You know, we certainly don't care if you're not from the state, but if you're interested in coming for, you know, some of those sessions that, you know, such as the infection control sessions, like my sessions on compliance issues, we had sessions here from lawyers, all of those things apply. It doesn't matter what state you're in. Now, yeah, a good third of our contact was for the state, but think about that.
CMS driven, obviously, that's right. The case too. No, I think that's a great idea because, I mean, at the end of the day, we're in a unique industry that within 2 minutes, we're going to find common ground to talk to anybody. So,
thanks so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, John. Take care.
Thank you, Jeffrey. And next we interviewed John Van Valkenburg. He is the president of the New York State Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers. And he talked about the association, the various programs and activities that the association is involved in.
So this is John Galey. I'm here at the New York State Association meeting in Tarrytown, and I'm with John Van Valkenburg, the president of the New York State Association. Welcome, John.
Thanks, John. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
My pleasure. This must be like the third, fourth, fifth time that we've had you on since we've been doing this. So.
Yep, at every meeting so far since my presidency, you've invited me to be on the podcast, and happy to be on again. I know I've mentioned before, I just wanted to thank you for having this podcast. I know it's a great resource to members of the ASC community. I'm a subscriber, and I listen to it. And actually, I listened to a couple of sessions on my drive up yesterday. So thank you.
All of us from Rochester. So give us a little bit of a background on what's going on in the State Association right now.
We've been busy. It's been it's been a good year for the State Association. You know, I was telling the members earlier and the board yesterday that one of our big goals of this year was to grow the association, get our membership numbers up, and we've been very successful in doing that. We've actually added 17 new members in the past year, so that's really grown. You know, we're up to 77 facility members now,
which is about half of the state members. So we still have a way to go, but that's a very good percentage.
We do, yeah. There's still opportunity, and we're still going after those others. But, you know, we've increased it substantially. Also, the meetings, we had a great meeting in Saratoga this spring. And this meeting, we're almost done, but it's so far it's gone great. As a state association meeting, this is our best attended meeting yet. We had about 110 registered attendees, and so far I've gotten good feedback, and we're actually working on planning our next meeting, which is going to be April 22nd and 23rd, right back here at the DoubleTree by Hilton here in Tarrytown. Aside from that, we've been busy with working on advocacy, getting members of the New York State Legislature into surgery centers, into our members' facilities to meet with them and really deliver our message to them and try and develop some relationships there. Also, one thing that we've been really successful in, we were actually just talking about today, we had the Department of Health here today, several members of the Department of Health, and we've really kind of opened up more of a dialogue with them, and we've really been working on relationship building with them so that we can be here as a resource for them, and hopefully they can be an ally for us, because, you know, I think their goals are very much the same as ours. We just, you know, want to make sure that our message is being heard by them and it's not being drowned out by, you know, some of the other special interests in Albany.
And organizations like the Hospital Association, of course, and the physicians themselves, you know, have a lot more money than we do that pours into this. And we have to make sure we're protecting our turf here and protecting our surgery centers, make sure they're continuing to provide the best care. And I was impressed to hear the Department of Health. Unfortunately, you can never get the Department of Health on a podcast. There's so many levels they have to go through in order to go through it. So we can only do talk about their stuff third hand or second hand. And fortunately, Lisa was on earlier. I don't know if you knew that. So she had a good chance to talk about some of the things that had to do with legislative and administrative initiatives.
Yeah, and actually, another thing that's been over the past years is about a year ago that we engaged Lisa and her firm to work on these things with the State Association, and that's been going really, really well as well. I think they've done a great job, and a lot of our success and the relationships that we've been building, particularly on the regulatory side, on the Department of Health side, has been largely, I think, as a result of some of her relationships that she had there previously.
I do want to do a quick story. I was one of my clients, just to kind of show how the State Association has been very proactive in assisting its members here. And, you know, what was it, 4 weeks ago, you know, one of our centers had a pre-opening survey. The surveyor came in and told us that we couldn't open because they had a UPS system, you know, state-of-the-art UPS system, probably the best UPS system I've ever seen. Definitely was going to protect the patient, take care of them for, you know, at least 90 minutes before the power went out. And they said that you needed to replace it with a gas generator. So about 10 minutes later, I'm on the phone with John. 5 minutes after that, he's on the phone with Capital Health. And tell me, just for our audience, so that they understand, you know, what we did. And then we already talked about the result, as we were able to get some things changed on that. But they need to know, you know, how we can react to that and how we can be their advocate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and again, that's where the relationship building comes from. And that's such a vital part of what we do as a state association is, like John said, he called me. I picked up the phone and called Lisa, and she picked up the phone and called her contacts at the Department of Health.
And we had a conference call, I think, the next day or within 2 days with all the players there. We weren't with the Department of Health. We were trying to do a strategy conference call, but it was helpful.
Yeah. The affected members and several members of the board, we got on a conference call, and we talked about the issue and developed a strategy for how we were going to try and get it resolved and what the talking points, the message that we wanted to deliver as a state association, you know, to the Department of Health. That's the great thing about the state association is the surgery centers, you know, individual surgery centers have such a small voice, you know, that if they're having an issue or running into a problem, it's difficult for them, you know, to talk to anybody. But, you know, collectively as a group, we can strategically and, you know, with some people that know their stuff, you know, we can develop a strategy and also get the ear of whoever it may be, whether it's somebody in the legislative or somebody on the regulatory side of the Department of Health and hopefully, you know, again, be heard and affect some change that's gonna benefit us. And I think this is, you know, we're still waiting for that dear administrator letter in reference to this generator issue. But, you know, we've been told, we've talked to the Department of Health, they hear us, they understand, they say that it's been resolved, and we can expect some communication on that that's gonna clarify and put us at ease, because, you know, it was kind of one of those scary moments that, right. You know, because there's multiple, although it was just one particular surgery center in a pre-opening survey that was affected, nobody else even knew that it was potentially an issue. So had there not been an organized response by the state association, you know, maybe that one surgery center would have known about it and dealt with the issue by themselves without the resources and maybe figured something out. But then, you know, next month, next year, whenever it happens to another surgery center and on down the line, you know, so this is an example of where, you know, by having the state association and working together, you know, it's providing benefits to our members and really in this case, all surgery centers that, you don't even necessarily see that as a benefit when you join the state association, but that's actually one of the biggest benefits are the things that are happening that you don't even necessarily know about that's really helping. You know, for every surgery center that has a UPS, they might not even know that bullet that we think they dodged here. So again, we're happy to do that.
And we should point out, too, that we didn't stop at the Department of Health or Capitol Health. We actually called upon our friends at the ASC Association. We were prepared to go to battle if we had to point out that CMS had no problem, you know, with this type of, you know, backup battery system. So we were prepared. We didn't have to really pull that in, but they were ready to help us out in a moment. So, again, because of our contacts, because of some of my contacts at the federal level, and again, that's all part of membership. So what are the benefits of membership? Why should our listeners out there definitely be a member of the New York State Association?
So great. Thanks for asking. Certainly any listeners that are in New York State, if you're not a member, then you definitely should be. And if you're outside of New York, you should be a member of your state association, because it is really important. You know, there's the benefits of, you know, our meetings, first of all. And again, they're not exclusively open to just members, but there's a discount for members. But, you know, the meetings, there's a lot of educational, there's opportunity to earn AEUs, infection control credits, things like that through the education, which is a big part. But really, what I find to be most valuable in these meetings, it's the networking and the developing relationships with the Department of Health as an association, but also developing relationships between surgery centers. I mean, you know, there's 154, I guess we learned this morning now, surgery centers in New York State. So for the most part, we don't really compete with each other a lot, you know, so we really want to work together. And what the state association allows us to do is work together. And that's one thing that the meeting facilitates.
I think we should point out, too, that we're one of the few state associations, very few state associations, that has two conferences a year, which is very unique. And it gives us an opportunity, well, first of all, to make sure we reach all of the people state, and we have them in different locations or try to, and of course gives us the opportunity to have a lot of different educational programs, very packed, as we know, with 8 credit units for administrators and 3 for infection control prevention. That's pretty good.
That's a great point. And actually, to pack it all into a day is another thing that we really want to do. We want to have as much of this educational content as possible, but to deliver it in an efficient way, you know, to our members and to the attendees, that they are going to, you know, not be away from the office for as long. That's another thing that we can do by having the two meetings. Again, it puts the distance between the meetings smaller, the time distance. And again, we have one in the upstate area, one in the downstate area, which again gets geographically close. Now, that said, we at this meeting and the meeting in the upstate area, we get attendees come from all over the state. So it's not limited to the areas where the meeting is held, but it's nice if one of the meetings here is not too far from you.
And we are resetting things right now, so that's why we have 2 in Tarrytown, because we're trying to move the fall conference upstate and the spring conference downstate, just so that we can remove some time conflicts. FYI, so that's why we're having 2 within a 12-month time frame in the same place, but it will be in the fall. We will be upstate somewhere, not sure yet where yet.
And we're still finalizing a date for fall. We'll have that coming out pretty soon. We're looking at probably somewhere in the middle of October of 2020. And again, we're not exactly sure yet, but probably in the capital region.
Now, we also have a special deal. Boy, I'm sounding like a salesperson here. A special deal for new centers, right?
Yeah. The board has decided to continue a deal that we did starting last year. And it's been very successful. And that's, you know, for any new facilities, so any of those other, I guess, 70 facilities out there that are not members of the New York State Association of Ambulatory Surgeons, there's an opportunity to join dues-free for your first year. And the reason we decided to do that is because that way for anybody who hasn't been associated and doesn't know what the state association does, it gives them an opportunity to check it out, and we show the value and get them to come to a meeting and start taking advantage of some of the benefits before they, you know, have to ask for the money. And actually, you know, it is membership in the state association is, I think, very reasonable. It is $750 for members, but again, for new members, dues free. So anybody that joins from now on will be 2020 dues free. So I think that's a great opportunity. Again, that's helped us grow this year, is offering that, hopefully, for those 17 new members that were dues free. They see the value, and they decide that, you know, when it's time to write a check to maintain their membership in the association, that they'll choose to do so. And I think they will, because, you know, again, there's the benefits that members get, but a lot of the work we do actually benefits all ASCs, not just members. So that's why it is important. You know, you don't want to be getting the free ride. You know, it's important that the association is supported. And part of that is by the members.
And I think we should also reach out to our vendors that are listening. We know quite a number of vendors actually listen to the podcast also, and that we had extremely robust vendor presence here in the conference. And, you know, what we find in these small conferences, you know, that are not national in scope, is that you as a vendor have a lot more time, individual time with people. And you might not get the same throughput, but you get more quality time with the audience member here. So, and people keep coming back. I mean, our company has a booth here. We would never even think about not coming, because the business, we always know we're going to get something from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to all of our vendor partners, you know, that have chose to sponsor this, our events this year and also next year, you know, hopefully. And I think that sponsoring our events, you know, do provide tremendous value. Like I said, it's not, you know, there's not as many attendees as a national conference, but I do think they get better quality of contact. You know, certainly the location of where we put vendors at these meetings, you know, gives them some more exposure. And also, you know, we're a targeted group. You know what I mean?
These are the decision makers.
Specific. Yeah, these are the decision makers and the supervisors, the nurse managers, and the administrators, and you know, and I think, you know, all the vendors that have been here have done a great job of, you know, partnering with us and also making our meeting more valuable. Also, because to some extent, you know, they're here. You know, to try and gain business, and that's the purpose of them being here. But actually, they're a great resource too, and being able to talk to them in this type of setting, and for them to hear what our issues are as they go to some of these sessions, and they hear about, you know, some of our challenges, and that kind of helps them develop strategies for helping us to solve those challenges. So again, I think we got a great relationship with the ones that are here.
We try to call upon those vendors that have a good message to be speakers too, if that's appropriate. And as long as they don't sell their product while there, we want everything to be information driven and not a sales pitch. But we do that a lot, and quite a number of vendors were speakers here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how does somebody become a member of the state association?
So the best way to become a member is you can go on our website. You can actually join. Let me tell you the website. First of all, it's nysaasc.org. You can go to the website. There's a section on membership. You can actually join right there at the website. But also, you can just email to info@nysaasc.org. Just send an email to that asking about how you can join, and we'll respond pretty quickly. We'll tell you, and it's you know, we make it really easy immediately once you join. We have a little welcome letter that goes out, and also we'll add you to, you know, one of the things is our email distribution list, that where we send out important information. We share some questions and some news, and also, you know, get information out about the meetings and everything else. So again, you can do that. Go to the website. The email address is on there as well. So nysaasc.org.
I'm going to put a link on our website so that you know how to do that. Thanks so much, John. As always, it's a pleasure having you on.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. And again, thank you, John. Thanks for being here. Thanks for helping out, helping putting these meetings together too. There's a lot of effort that goes into putting on a meeting, and John and his team help out tremendously. And also, you know, and also having the podcast here is great too. Yeah. It's a great
this is fun.
It's a lot of fun too. To see people at the microphones all day walking up and talking to all the different people, you know, on the vendor side, you know, on the advocacy side, and also different officers and everything like that. State association.
So, it's one. I wasn't even sure that we didn't get a room this time. So we're actually recording in the middle of the hall, which means there's a lot of background noise. But I'll tell you, I think that's actually been kind of good because people seeing us, doing the podcast or thinking about it. And, I think it's getting some more exposure to our vendors, too, that are here.
Yeah. That's a good point. You know, in the past, the podcast has always been broadcast from a back room.
Right.
Back room editing room where the busboys are disturbing us and the ones making the noise. But yeah, it's really neat having it out here, kind of front and center of the whole show. So again, thanks for everything you do, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks, John. Next, we talk to Lisa Wickens-Altieri, the president and founder for Capital Health Consulting, which provides government relations services to the association. And they discussed activities in Albany on behalf of the association.
This is John Gailey. I'm at the New York State Association meeting in Tarrytown, New York, and I'm with Lisa Altieri, who is with our government affairs group. She's a good government affairs professional. And tell us a little bit about yourself first, too.
So my name is Lisa Altieri. I am a registered nurse by background. I worked 26 years in government. And so today...
I'm not holding that against you, by the way.
And we actually started the government relations firm. We do health consulting. So one of the things we do is we help providers. We go in and we identify problems, or we come in during crisis management and help when there's a problem.
It's so funny because we were on a panel together this morning. We're looking at each other during the whole thing, and they're asking me questions about it because, of course, our company does that on an ongoing basis. We have so much more to talk about. And we have great stories, I'm sure. But your association with the State Association has been incredible. First of all, thank you so much for your hard work. It's amazing, what a difference your participation has been and some of the challenges that we faced within the last couple weeks, months, and it's been great. So what happened is the New York State Association decided to hire a firm. How long ago was that?
So it was last spring.
Okay.
There was an RFP that the association put out to several different firms. We were one of them. We applied and we were down to the top three. And I was told that they really didn't think they'd be hiring us.
That's right.
But then we came in. We have over 100 years of Department of Health experience and working with governments. So they awarded the firm. And then shortly thereafter, we had the spring conference.
And I should point out that she's not over 100 years old. She's referring to combined experience, of course. And I'm on the board. It was part of the decision-making process to do that. And as we pointed out earlier, I'm actually the founder of the State Association. So I know the whole history and the years and how many people we've gone through. So, but I thought what I'd do is bring on this special episode here to talk a little bit about what's going on at the state level. And why don't you talk on a macro level? Because a lot of our listeners don't even know, understand state politics. So that would really help to set the scene for our situation.
Right. So, been in government, like I said, for 26 years. State government right now is very unique because we have Dem across the board. And so we have a Senate majority that's led by Andrea Stewart Cousins, and she's from downstate. We also have the Assembly is still Democrat, and then we also have Governor Cuomo. What's happened at the level of executive level, which is the governor, as well as, both sides of legislature, is there's a lot of changes happening. The Department of Health, right now in my firm, we have many people. Last night, this morning, you're seeing a lot of Department of Health staff. There's been a huge turnover in government, and a lot of the senators and the assembly members are also new. So it's a really unique perspective that we're living in right now at that level. On top of that, we have a lot of different changes happening on a fiscal level. So this governor came in 2011 looking at how we can address the Medicaid costs. And how do we do that? And one of the things that was started was the Medicaid redesign team. And so there was a lot of positive forward thinking happening on where we could change and improve services. and remove some of the costs. Fast forward, we've kind of now, we're facing a $1.7 billion state deficit for this fiscal year, which ends March 31st. And then after that, we're looking at doubling that. So, and that's just the state share. $3.4 billion is with the federal match. So that is like a big issue. The other side of this is the whole country is looking at how are we going to continue to pay for increasing healthcare benefits and costs. So New York State's been very vocal, especially on the Democrat side, on single payer. And so it's going to really impact healthcare right now as we know it. So that's a big change.
And during our panel this morning, you did say to the audience, you know, do you understand the impact of single payer? And of course, I'm a professor. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I teach in some of my classes is some of those issues as to what payer mechanisms could do. And I like to say it this way. If the government's involved, do you think our rate's going to be higher than Medicare? Right. And so if we're going to have a single payer, imagine all of your revenue being Medicare. And that's what we're doing in feasibility studies out right now. We're just saying, OK, let's price everything out based upon what a Medicare rate would be. So the fiscal impact would be huge. The impact, of course, on our physician population, as our older doctors just give up and say, I'm quitting. People will be going to, you know, probably a lot more, you know, salaried individuals who just say, I'm not going to take the risk because the revenue isn't going to be there to support it. There's huge ramification, which we can do an entire podcast on right there. But as you said, this is a discussion that's happening right now. This is something that really could happen if we're not good watchdogs of this.
The general population, including providers, agencies, and you know, providers, like physicians, nurses, NPs, PAs, don't understand what that's really going to look like. So if you're paying attention to some of the forums that they're having, they're all for a single payer without realizing the unintended consequences that we're all going to face. New York's already too expensive.
And of course, it's going to push pressure on organizations to cut back on staff. I mean, there's only so many items that we can cut our expenses in. And so that's a huge issue. What other things are going on in the state right now that we have to be keeping an eye out for that's going to impact the ASCs?
So we heard from Tracy Rally today from Certificate of Need group in the Department of Health. There's been a lot of discussion in regards to, you know, allowing more ambulatory surgery centers to enter the market. We're very, very heavy CON state. And what we heard today is that the Department of Health is very encouraging of ambulatory surgery centers, even though the big hospital systems are saying, hey, they're taking some of our revenue, and they have the ability to really kind of close some of our more rural hospitals. And what we heard and what we're paying attention to and having ongoing conversations about is that it's really about collaboration and working together. I expect that there's going to be an MRT2, which I did not mention today. I expect there's going to be a new Medicaid redesign team so that we can now go back out there and look at what do we need to do. Burger 2, where we look at where we have to close duplicative services, where we're not getting good money for the value and good outcomes. I think that's going to come as well. I do think for ambulatory surgery centers, they really do need to start to talk to the insurers. We need to have conversations about value-based purchasing and programming. That's going to be critical. And then the other thing is we really need to be at the table. So when we're having these discussions and listening about what they're talking about at Public Health and Health Planning Council, one of my goals would be in the next year or two is I'm going to try to see if we can get someone from ambulatory surgery to be on that Public Health and Health Planning Council.
By the way, pick me. Well, it's just, you know, I've been involved in various things over the years, and I can't believe that we're even having to have this conversation. We are a major part of the field right now, and the fact that we don't have any representation. By the way, the same issue at the national level, but at the state level is kind of crazy. They did drop a little bit of a bombshell on us today about that 50%. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so you know, I've been talking to the Department of Health about many of the issues surrounding ambulatory surgery centers. And today they're basically saying if there's going to be a change of ownership of 50% or more, that they are going to not only require that the 5-year limited life gets reset, which is very concerning, especially if you already have an established ASC, and that includes whether or not it's the parent corp is, or the parent partner, we'll say, it is a hospital. So I was really surprised to hear that both you and I did not think that was that was going in that direction. So I was actually, you know, disappointed in that.
Well, and we had recently, one of our clients had a CON that was approved. They had just, so we filed a CON that was for an expansion at the same time we were filing a limited life extension. That wasn't our intention to do it that way. It's just the timing of the projects, unfortunately, just ended up being together at the same time. And DOH came back to us and said, we're approving you, but we're extending your limited life for another 3 years, which, you know, we really didn't argue because, you know, at that point, we had already been through it before. I mean, we were used to it, and we were certainly ready to do that. But that was the beginning of what I could see would be some changes that we knew would happen. I want to make one point, one of the points that I've been making, and I want our listeners to be clear about, is that just because you haven't, just because you have never been a limited life and you've been around for a very long time, you still have to do that state reporting. You still have to do SPARKS reporting. You still have to do a cost report. And you might think that nobody has done anything or has come back to you about this up until now. But anytime you go in front of the Department of Health, they have all of that information about you. And that's going to be a tough conversation. And especially if you have a change in ownership of 50% or more, and you have filed a cost report in your entire time, New York requires cost reports, you're going to have some explaining to do to the Department of Health. And you know, of course, we've made it very clear here at the State Association, too, on behalf of the State Association, that we are encouraging our members to, you know, file these reports, that there is no excuse for not doing it. The fact that they haven't said anything to you when you didn't file it, you know, in a year, doesn't mean that you don't have the obligation to do that. Are there anything other things on the horizon that we should be concerned about in the state?
I think, you know, one of the big issues is going back to that budget deficit.
Yep.
I really can't even say enough. Living through the Department of Health and facing some of those budget deficits, it means cuts. We've always said, you know, let's take a scalpel approach and not go across the board. Unfortunately, the easiest way to go forward is across the board cuts.
Right.
So we're starting our budget negotiations and discussions now. State of the State starts, you know, January 8th of this year. The governor puts out and starts talking about what the budget's going to look like. I do think one of the things that we have to look at and focus on for the association is the unfair playing field in regards to reimbursement and how to do some rate rationalization. Our duty to come up with some options to present to the Department of Health, so that we could try to see if we can't fix some of that.
That's right. And they seem to be willing to listen. All the conversation I have with the Department of Health here, and I hope they're listening, is that it's been great. I mean, it's a different relationship than we've had in the past. They're listening to us now. We're not, like, you know, waving our hands saying, look at us. You know, they know that we're here now. And a lot of that is thanks to you. I mean, I think we've had a presence over the years, and all of us as past presidents have tried. But, you know, now, of course, it's coming down to dollars. And they know that we are part of that solution. If you want us, you want to close that budget deficit, we got an answer for you. We might not be able to close that whole budget deficit, but we certainly can help, you know, make a cut into that. And I agree with you that we got to find some ways of doing it. And again, I want our listeners from New York State to make sure you're part of this conversation. You got to be joining the State Association. That's a big part of what you're doing, is helping us to get out there and recruit everybody. And by the way, become a member even before you start your surgery center, because this whole battle starts before you even open those doors. You need to know what's going on. You need to be prepared for all. And participate in this, and also help out. So talk a little bit about how surgery centers can help you in your job.
So one of the things we're trying to talk about is open your doors. Help us bring in policy and decision makers and introduce them to what you do. It's critical. The minute we do that, people don't understand. You know, the policymakers, the legislators, even folks in the don't necessarily understand the difference between an ambulatory surgery center and an office-based surgery.
Right. Absolutely right.
And that is critical. So we've been having those conversations. We've had several on-site visits that have been very successful. And in doing that, we're educating folks so that when we go back to talk to them at the government, they understand.
Right.
they can actually visualize, they saw it, they know it, and they can also follow up, and they actually do reach out to us about some solutions. So I really need people to step up, really help the association, be part of the solution. And we've talked about possibly working more on our PAC, our public advocate, you know, our pop. Sorry. You know, we need to actually have some of those dollars so that you guys can get there and do the work that you need to do.
That's right. And become active politically, you know, unfortunately. Those of us that don't necessarily enjoy politics, that is part of our business, and that's something that we have to do if we want to be able to make the change. And we've seen it. We've already seen what that participation will do. We've already seen what you know, working with the legislators as well as working in the department can do to make some changes.
Right.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time, Lisa. We'll talk to you again, I'm sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa. Next, we spoke to my dear friend, Phyllis Wirth, who is with IntelAir, and she talked about the IntelAir program that has been developed with the New York State Association members.
Hello, this is John Gilley. I'm here at the New York State Association meeting in Tarrytown. I'm here with my dear friend, Phyllis Wirth. We go way back, don't we, Phyllis?
We sure do. Probably about, I would say, 13, 14 years, John.
That's right. I was 13 when I started. You were 12. So, and Phyllis is with IntelAir, and you do a great job for the industry. Thank you for all the work that you do in order to keep the costs low. For those that don't know, which I'd be shocked, IntelAir is one of the big GPOs that covers the ASC space. And we're here in New York, so I thought I'd have you talk about your special relationship with the New York State Association.
So about, I would say 13 years ago, I was working with the president of the New York State Ambulatory Association, and we decided a partnership would be a good idea to help the association members add purchasing volume, aggregating their volume to achieve some nice discounts, along with a little bit of revenue sharing.
You literally help to pay some of the bills of the state association with the revenue sharing.
Yes, and yes, because we do include a marketing fee based on the aggregated purchase volume of the individual members.
Right. So basically what that means to the state association members is that your fees are lower because the fees that we help to generate from the purchase of products through IntelAir.
That's okay. We're formerly known as Amerinet. We are provider-owned. We are owned by Intermountain Healthcare, which is one of the bigger IDNs out in Utah. We have over 100,000 members currently that are enjoying our discounts, along with our healthcare solutions, supply chain solutions that are a little bit different than your typical GPO savings, such as insurance services.
It's not just products anymore.
No, it's more trying to find some other solutions that help healthcare facilities either generate revenue or offset some of their costs in other ways.
Let's start with the basics. I mean, believe it or not, there are still people out there that don't have a GPO. So if you don't have a GPO, what can you expect to save just by setting up a GPO relationship?
That's a great question. And based on all the cost studies that we've done and the data we've analyzed over the years, we find the typical savings to be anywhere from 10% to it can be as high as 25%, depending on what they're buying.
And remind me again how much you charge.
Nothing.
That's right. What a deal. Yeah. And more importantly, you know, you got the benefit of having the IntelAir team helping the centers to define the products, to make sure that the costs are kept low, that you have a good relationship with the distributor, that you maximize your opportunities in the vendor marketplace.
Right. We really try and be a really great partner, maybe an extension to a healthcare facility. And we really pride ourselves on the service that we provide and even some customized solutions that we can do for a facility when needed.
So Phyllis, you've also helped me out over the years in starting up new centers, too. For those that are listening in New York and anywhere else in the country, really, that IntelAir serves, which is the whole country. But talk a little bit about how you can help a new center before they even open those doors.
Right. We can take a look at anywhere from groundbreaking, working with their architect. We have construction consultants on staff, and we get involved right from the start, or anywhere from doing the carpeting, any type of furnishing for a facility. We connect them with suppliers. We get them quotes on everything that they're purchasing.
Right. So what is the specific benefit to a New York State Association member to being not only a member of the New York State Association, but also partnering with Intelair for their GPO?
Aside from the fact that we can save them some money, there's the revenue sharing that we do, and there's a lot of resources that are available to the members via our website or through working with their Intelair representative. So there's savings and just service.
So how do we get in touch with you?
We have a website. It's www.intelair.com, or you can reach out to me. I'm Phyllis Worth at phyllis.worth@intelair.com.
With this spelled W-E-R-T-H.
That's right. Not W-O-R-T-H, but I'm worth it.
So. That's right. Thank you so much, Phyllis. It's always great to talk to you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Phyllis. And lastly, John spoke to Wes Merritt, who represents the Physicians Reciprocal Insurer, or PRI, who talked about the PRI programs that are available in New York State.
So this is John Gale here. I'm at the New York State Association meeting in Tarrytown. I'm with Wes Merritt from PRI, my dear old friend. I've been working PRI for many, many years on the insurance side. So Wes, welcome to the ASC podcast with John Gale.
Appreciate it. Thanks for giving us the time.
So I thought I'd talk a little bit about some of the things that are going on in New York specifically, but also, with regard to admitted carriers and insurance and, kind of some of the top issues. So I'll just let you talk a little bit about the major challenges that are out there in the malpractice area.
To start, PRI has been writing malpractice insurance since 1983, was one of two really of the only admitted carriers in New York State for many years. And a lot of it has changed in the past 10 or so years to where a market has opened up where other carriers have come to New York State. And there was an opportunity there for them to come in as non-admitted carriers, and they are risk retention groups. So the New York market, because of the new influx of some carriers, has seen some changes in terms of what's available and what options there are for doctors and facilities. Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about, because I'm sure most of our audience probably doesn't know the difference between an admitted carrier in the state of New York and a non-admitted carrier?
All right. So admitted carriers are carriers that are overseen by the New York State Insurance Department or the Department of Financial Services, and they review the filings for each carrier every year on an annual basis, and essentially they oversee what the rules are of each company, and in turn for doing that, there is a guarantee fund in place that those carriers are protected by the state.
So there are definite advantages of being with an admitted carrier is what you're saying, correct?
That's right. Yep. So because of that guarantee fund and those protections in place, the oversight allows the carriers to have that protection, and a non-admitted carrier can offer discounts on their product and things like that. The coverages are not overseen by the insurance department. So there is a little bit of a risk involved with going that route in terms of a business decision for coverage because you're not getting that additional protection in place.
Well, and you also don't have necessarily a recourse to the state insurance department in all cases if you are working with a non-admitted carrier.
That's correct. So if a carrier decides we need to change our rates at any given time, they don't have to necessarily get any approvals to do that. It can just be as of a certain day, their rules can change.
And you're talking about a non-admitted carrier.
That's correct.
So what's going on in New York State right now? What are some of the challenges that we have in the malpractice area? How are our rates doing? Talk a little bit about the current malpractice situation.
Again, because there are a number of things that are happening within the state, but one of the things that you're seeing a lot of, and this particular issue isn't New York specific, this is a national level issue, is the acquisition of independent practices into healthcare organizations and larger health systems and things like that. So the independent practices are kind of dwindling off little by little, and that changes the whole overall view and structure of the practices and who's looking to get their own coverage and things like that. In terms of rates, just typically what's being reported is that potentially going forward, rates could start to increase a little bit. We're entering what's called a hard market where carriers that have been flexible with their pricing and applying credits for whatever they might be able to apply credits for based on their underwriting guidelines, maybe using those credits less. So it might not necessarily be a rate increase per se, but the premiums could be going up because of a decrease in the use of discounts.
So one of the things that I've found over the years with PRI provides a different level of services, in my view. And, of course, I've worked with you guys for many years. I've spoken on some of your panels in the past. You're unique. Talk a little bit about what's unique about PRI and what makes your service offering different.
Historically, PRI was established by a physician. It was kind of an idea that he had to put a company in place that was based on the reciprocal format, which is essentially a company established and created by doctors. So the history is doctor-based. Things that were put in place were focused of helping doctors, the risk management programs, which are live seminars, online seminars. It's always with the focus of offering something to the insureds for being with PRI.
How do surgery centers sign up for the PRI service? What's different about you in that area?
Well, one of the nice things on the facility side is there's a lot of uniqueness to the way that a program can be put together based on the individual facility. Whether it's a change in coverage or certain limits that might be available, you can really talk to somebody regarding exactly what might be the best coverage for that particular facility. So going to the PRI's website, PRI.com, is a good first start to really start to get basic information.
Over the years, many of our clients have used PRI. One of the unique services that you offer also is risk assessments, where you have a nurse on your staff come out or a staff person come out and review that organization and kind of give some suggestions, as well as do training, correct?
That's right. Yep. So being hands-on with the insureds and facilities and things like that is important because it's going to really benefit everybody. It makes the insured a better risk and puts them in a position to get a different perspective from the insurance company to say, you know, where do we feel as though there could be a risk involved, whether it be for cleanliness or whatever the case might be. It's a review that's done, the goal being to improve the practice as well as improve them as an individual risk for the company.
Thanks so much. I appreciate your time, Wes.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Well, that's it for the special New York State Association of ASCs episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Join us for our regular weekly podcasts, and please consider becoming a patron by going to our website at ascpodcast.com. And please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, All Rights Reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.